This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this month's Ask an Astronomer, we are joined by Dr. Anna Scaife, who will be answering three listener-submitted questions. Our first question is from Christoph Kranbull. How do you deal with all the interference of electromagnetic waves around Jodrell Bank? I wonder every time I pass it in a car or on a train. Does it become worse over time? Will there come a point where it renders Jodrell Bank useless?
So this is a very important question, actually, as well as being a good question to ask, because radio interference is a constant problem for all radio astronomy observatories, and certainly Jodrell Bank does not have an easy time of it. As the person asking the question correctly pointed out, the train line goes right past the edge of the observatory, and the observatory is not that isolated. It sits close to a number of towns and really not that far from Manchester Airport, and in fact the radar for Manchester Airport really limits a lot of the science we can do in that particular direction. Radar itself is whilst it cuts out a particular direction for us, it's a very clear signal. What's more difficult to deal with is the sort of the general hum of all of the background noise around Jodrell Bank, and this is noise that's produced by everything from your mobile phone to spark plugs and car engines. It's a big source of interference. Any kind of wireless technology, really anything electronic produces a signal, and the Lovell dish is so large that it's sensitive enough to pick up pretty much anything. Now Jodrell Banks doesn't have a protected radio quiet zone around it, which is a disadvantage for us as radio astronomers. A lot of other radio astronomy observatories around the world have nationally protected radio quiet zones around them. If you take something like the Green Bank telescope in the US, the radio quiet zone around that is so severe that you can't bring in a non-diesel car within the observatory area. And that's because of the interference from the spark plugs in petrol cars. You also can't take a mobile phone onto site, and you can't do that at Jodrell either. But at Green Bank, you also can't take on an iPod, a digital camera, or any other kind of electronic equipment that you might carry on your person. At Jodrell Bank, we don't enforce quite such strict rules. We do ask people to turn off their mobile phones. As it tells you when you go into the observatory at Jodrell, the Lovell's sensitive enough to pick up a mobile phone signal from Mars. So someone standing right next to the dish having a conversation is pretty loud for us. But obviously we want people to enjoy their experience at the observatory, and that means taking photos and, you know, not completely stripping themselves of all of their other electronic equipment. We do try to maintain a reasonably radio quiet environment, and that means that we examine all the planning applications that go in around the observatory. And in fact, the director of the observatory reads through every planning application, which is a huge job because you have to cover a very wide radius around the observatory. And we're not always successful if something is going to interfere with the telescope. There are planning proposals that get through that do cause us problems. And we have to develop a very sophisticated suite of cleaning tools, if you like, for our data. So we have to excise the radio frequency interference as often as we can. Sometimes we just can't do that, though, and it just saturates the signal, at which point we just lose the data. That means that every new source of interference erodes the science from Jodrell Bank a little bit more. So it's very difficult for us to find that balance between not trying to impose restrictions on the people who live in the area and still maintaining the kind of science that you expect to come out of a national facility, which is what Jodrell Bank is. It is the UK's only national radio facility, and it puts UK scientists in a very advantageous position when it comes to competing on the world stage. So it's very sad when we can't do that because of some particular problem in the RFI environment.
So this is really a veto for the Jodcast plans to launch a radio station.
You can have the radio station, you just can't have a transmitter.
Our second question is from Paul Stevenson. He wants to know what the best way is for an amateur to get started with radio astronomy, and are there any books or courses you would recommend?
So radio astronomy, I think, is perhaps slightly less accessible than other forms of astronomy because it relies so heavily on an understanding of electromagnetism and signal processing. But there are definitely ways you can get involved. A good way to get started, I have to say, is to go and find your local ham radio club, and they'll induct you into the ways of electromagnetic waves and radio signals. The other thing to do is to come and visit us at Jodrell Bank. The Discovery Centre gives you an overview and an introduction into radio astronomy and radio astronomy in the UK particularly. If you want something a bit more technical and you want to delve into the details, then there are actually quite a few good texts on radio astronomy. Most of them entitled something pretty obvious like Radio Astronomy. The book by Burke and Graham Smith, which is called Radio Astronomy, is a very accessible entry point to radio astronomy. There's a very good book called Radio Telescopes, so slightly obvious title, by Rolfs, which is a very nice introduction to the technical details of radio astronomy. If you don't want to go out and buy a book, you don't have to. There's a very nice online course, which I particularly like, and which I also recommend for my students, which is called Essential Radio Astronomy, which was written by Jim Condon at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in the US. And to find that, just type Essential Radio Astronomy into Google. And it's a very detailed course that covers everything from astrophysical radio emission mechanisms to how a radio telescope works and how you can string radio telescopes together into interferometers. So that's a great introduction if you really want to get into the details.
Our final question is another one from Christoph, who asks, what difference would putting a telescope on the dark side of the moon make? He's thinking in general, but also about spotting inbound asteroids that could threaten the Earth.
So I have to say I don't know a lot about spotting asteroids, but I can say there would be advantages to putting a radio telescope on the far side of the moon from the perspective of receiving more receiving radio signals more in a more sensitive way, primarily because, one, you have no radio frequency interference, or a very limited amount of radio frequency interference on the far side of the moon. And secondly, for low radio frequencies, it's very good because it puts you outside the Earth's ionosphere, which is a big source of problems, if you like. For radio observing at low frequencies, the ionosphere causes refraction and attenuation of radio waves, and really below a frequency of about 10 to 30 megahertz, you're not going to get anything usable out of a radio telescope on the surface of the Earth. So putting a radio telescope on the far side of the moon, or in space generally, is very good for low-frequency radio astronomy. And there's lots of interesting science to do at those wavelengths. A lot of the early universe, what we call the dark ages of the universe, is observable in the radio if you can go down to those very low frequencies. But, as I say, from the surface of the Earth, it's not really possible. There have been some proposals to put radio telescopes in space. Nothing massively successful so far, but it's definitely a possibility.
Thank you very much, Dr. Scope. Thank you for your time.